Assalamu alaikum.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, peace and blessings upon His servant and His messenger Muhammad forever. I mean, there's no God but Allah, and Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. Brothers and sisters, first of all, we want to once again thank Brother Kazim Ahmed, Imam Kazim Ahmed, for very beautiful words said about the man who is sitting right here behind us. So let's give him another round of applause. Thank him. Allah Allah. I'm not going to say anything because he's here, the man who you want to hear from. I want to say just one word, and that's something that I drew from his very beautiful delivery at the Juma Prayer Friday. And that's in our prayers. There's the 20th chapter of the Holy Quran, Taha, which mentions prayer, you know, praying early in the morning and the spiritual joy from prayer. And many of us go to prayer, but in our prayers, we should pray to Allah to bless the leadership of this community. Pray to Allah to bless the Muslims in this community and bless us with the strength, the power, the perseverance, the patience that it takes to move this community forward. Ask Allah to bless us that we will be helpless and not burdened to the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad. And as we go to prayer, many times we have personal problems. And in our prayer, we ask Allah, oh Allah, bless me with this, give me that, help me with this, help me with that. But if you just think about helping yourself, think about yourself as a part of a whole community. And when we rise early in the morning or say that prayer in the evening, then ask Allah, oh Allah, bless the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad. Bless his leadership in this community. Bless the Muslim community that we can come together as one behind his dynamic leadership. So on that, that's all I want to say. Let us hear from the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad, the Chief Imam of the Nation of Islam. Takbir. Takbir.
In the name of Almighty God, the most gracious, most merciful, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wahda la sharika lah. I give open testimony that there is nothing worthy of worship but Allah, and there is nothing like unto Him. Wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluhu. And I bear witness openly that Muhammad is His slave servant and His messenger. Dear beloved people, brothers and sisters Muslims, assalamu alaikum. If you'll just give me a few moments to get myself together here. I really enjoyed listening to Brother Imam Kazim Ahmed. He's a beautiful brother, and he's got a understanding on the teaching. So that's all right. See, when you got C understanding, you're not doing too bad, but he has A understanding. To all the believers and our friends out there in our big audience, today we're speaking nationwide, the East Coast, West Coast, North, South. I pray Allah that He'll bless us today to come closer to truth and to gain more strength to stay in that truth. You're a beautiful sight out there. I don't know why people like to collect themselves according to physical description and physical color. They look much better when you just mix them all up. Black, brown, red, and yellow. I even see some so-called white out there. So, but I mean you. I see some of you. Your skin is so far white. Your hair didn't make it, but your skin did. Right. All praise due to Allah. I didn't greet my sisters over here yet. Excuse me.
Assalamu alaikum.
And my brother.
Assalamu alaikum.
You know, things are happening so fast nowadays. Got us almost hypnotized. We're not conscious of exactly what's taking place. The reverend of a church, and I mean an intelligent reverend, very intelligent reverend, dignified man, sizable congregation, sent me word that he wants me to give him a name that's not a slave name. God is greatest. Allahu Akbar. Now, first I want to make a few comments on, I have a few words to say about our movement. And when I say movement, I don't mean it in the sense, in the common sense. I mean it in the religious sense. Something on the move. That's what I mean by movement. And afterward, I hope to talk with you on the religion. We have made big changes in this community. We've even changed the name that was given to this community by its founder and first teacher, Master Fazl Muhammad. He named this community the Lost Found Nation of Islam in North America. That was the first name given to this community. Lost Found Nation of Islam in the wilderness of North America. Now, what did he mean by wilderness? You know, this place wasn't a jungle. Not that kind of jungle that we read about in fictitious life of Tarzan or something, you know. But by wilderness, he meant that the divine message hadn't been cultivated in this part of the world. It was left unattended. People were in religion, but the divine teachings were neglected. So it was a wilderness. The people were practicing things that were very, very far away from their religion that they professed. Christians in America were practicing race hatred, discrimination, practicing savagery, brutal, cruel savagery against a materially and politically and financially weak people called so-called Negroes. So it was indeed a wilderness. We can't deny that. When we look at the moral nature and life of America, when Master Fadl Muhammad came in 1930, was indeed a wilderness. There were people with degrees just like they have degrees now in all the sciences, human sciences, physical sciences. There were people preaching the religion just as they're preaching it now. Catholics, Protestants, all the groups. But the society, its pulse and atmosphere was that of a jungle, a wilderness, where everything had to fight for its own life if it didn't belong to the strong species. The mighty species was devouring all the others. And he also said that we were lost and found. By that he meant that we came from a people who were Muslim. Now we've been made to believe that we came from Afro or African ancestors who were all witch doctors. And every now and then someone would get a little education and would learn that Ethiopians are also so-called Negroes or blacks. And say, well, Africans are Christians and witch doctors. But the fact of history tells us that the great nations of Africa, at least in the late history, the middle history and late history of that country, were Muslim and are Muslims today. Sudan used to be Mali, Songhai. These were great empires of black people. And they were Muslim empires. I have met and talked with students of so-called black studies. And they be telling me about the great Songhai and the great this and the great that. I said to myself, these people are talking about Muslims and don't know it. They were talking like they were witch doctors, you know, who happened to learn how to use a square and a compass. They were Muslim. Islam can be said, can be called, pardon me, the religion of so-called Africa. Because there are more Muslims there than there are people belonging to any other religion. Nigeria, Sudan. These are two big populated Muslim nations. Not only that, there are the countries of Morocco, Sierra Leone, even in Kenya, there are more Muslims than Christians. And in many other places in Africa, you find Muslims. You can go to Africa and get the feeling that Africa is the land of Muhammad. Because there are more Muslims there than there are Muslims in Arabia. Why do they keep these things from us? For the same reason that they keep it from you, that I went and met with all the top leaders in the Muslim country, Muslim world. They don't want you to know that an ex-slave, a descendant of slaves in America,
should feel proud and honored that he has the opportunity to eat in a restaurant with white folks, so-called white folks. I have the freedom to run for office or to eat from the same restaurant window, use the same toilet, take the same seats on the bus. We should be so proud of these things that we shouldn't look or think anywhere else. So when a man has mistreated his wife, he doesn't want his wife to see how other men treat their wives. He wants to keep his wife locked up so she won't see how normal men treat their wives. These old strong, so-called white Americans are the same way. They have mistreated us, and they know that even what we boast of is little. And all of this stuff that you're boasting of, it's a little bit. You haven't got anything. They have made a big change. They have made a big turn for the better. They're giving us a much better break. And they're speaking to us like we're human beings. But they are not yet repented. If they had truly repented, they would tell you the truth. That's a sign that you have truly repented. You tell the truth. But they want to keep the same old lie in the atmosphere. Want to keep you thinking that this is the best and there's nothing comparable to this anywhere. Might be the best in terms of gross national production. Monetary terms and material terms, and in terms of weaponry, might be the greatest. In fact, I believe it is. But even when we speaking on man to man and woman to woman terms, we can't say it's the greatest even in that respect. Because there are some countries who have more rich people in their population, and the wealth of those people excel what you find here in America. Kuwait, there's no poverty there at all. No such thing as poverty. Sharjah, no such thing as poverty there. If there's any unemployment there, it's somebody from the outside waiting to get hired by those on the inside. But see, the world that we've lived under, they know they've mistreated us terribly. Do you think they're going to tell you these things? They think they're using wisdom, but they're acting stupid. The masses of people are not fools anymore. Time, crowding in on each other, television, and all these things of modern life have made it impossible for people to keep the masses down in ignorance. You don't have to learn how to read to get the benefit of letters. You don't have to pick up a book and read it. Read the TV. You can look at it with your eyes and listen to it with your ears. Knowledge is everywhere, and you don't have to get it from the page anymore. The world has changed. But the leadership is still acting like the world is still back there 20 years ago or 50 years ago. Not the same world anymore. So Master Fadl Muhammad told us that our ancestors were Muslims.
That's not to say that some of them weren't other than Muslims. But since no one said to you, told you, that you had Muslim ancestors, he didn't take the pains to tell you that some of them were witch doctors and maybe a few Christians. Now, wasn't that justice? Since America didn't tell you you had Muslim ancestors, what right have he got to mention the witch doctors and a few Christians? All praise is due to Allah. This simple truth that I'm telling you right now is more valuable to you, to this society, to all people in America, than everything you can listen to coming from the mouth of educators and statesmen. The real problem is right here where we are working. Not only the problem for us, but the problem for the whole world. We are working on the problem that is the problem of the whole world. Racial and national hypocrisy. That's what's got all the problems on the back of humanity. If we can kill that racial and national hypocrisy, we can change the life of the world. He called us a nation. Why? Because we weren't accepted in a nation, didn't have a nation. Oh, in 1930, man, we had the United States. You had what? You didn't have the right to ride on a bus in some places in 1930, unless you took the back seat like you had stink on you or something. Had to go around the side to the window to get your hamburger. Couldn't go to the front door. And even here in Chicago, you hardly could live 4 or 5 months without reading about a lynching. Right here in Chicago. Some wild, crazy-minded Caucasian just went on a rampage, foaming at the mouth like a raven beast. Disfigured, mutilated the brother just because he was in his neighborhood. Many times he was coming from work in his neighborhood, had been doing some old funky job for some of his people. But just because he was in the neighborhood, he was savagely mutilated. This happened just 30, 20 years ago, maybe. Not in Mississippi, in Chicago. The people are being killed everywhere. That don't mean that you don't have a country. Not only were you being lynched by citizens, but you didn't have law to protect you from those lynchers. And it was with the pushing and the efforts of the NAACP and the support they got from others that legislation was passed to protect us in this wilderness against savage, raving maniacs. So don't tell me what you had in 1930. You ain't talking to no nigger or to no Negro. Never was a Negro. Never was a colored man. I was born a Muslim. So maybe your senses are warped.
got a job to do. The job is saving the life of the world. And God has prepared a mighty, triumphant army for that job. And I got to recruit you whether you like it or not. Nation. The Caucasian had so thoroughly worked on our minds over the centuries of slavery that we didn't want to identify with Africa. Marcus Garvey failed as a leader because there wasn't enough support among American blacks for Africa or for identity with Africa. The so-called educated of our kind laughed at Marcus Garvey. And laughed him right on out of America. Don't tell me about yourself. I know you, brother. And I know that you were just coming out of the sleep of slavery and Tomism. You ain't free yet. Very few of you that's real men. You hear what I'm saying? There's a very few so-called Bedouins out there walking the street that are real men. The majority out there are nothing but dumb tools of this society. I meet them every day trying to prove to white America that they are comparable, pardon me, in their whiteness. I want you to understand what I'm saying. I'm not eloquent, you know, I didn't get no degrees nowhere. So I'm gonna say it again, I want you to understand clearly what I'm saying. I meet almost every day so-called educated, dignified, strong and upright men of our community. Of our color, or skin, or hair, I don't know how we can identify this thing. And I listen to their language, watch their behavior. I see people who are just so nervous all the time that they're going to do something or say something or act in some way that's going to make the white establishment, so-called white establishment, think that they're not with it. I'm not with your white, so-called white establishment. And I hope you ain't with it. I hope the white man ain't with it. That's what I'm saying. I'm not with it, and I hope the Caucasian is not with it. Because that establishment is a dying establishment. What I look like going around trying to make people think that I'm with the establishment. Now listen, poor brother and sister. Your definition of establishment might not be mine. I don't mean that I'm after destroying order and government and law in the society. But I'm after destroying the artificial mentality and the artificial humanism that is in this society. And this society has executed its desires and judgments from a position of artificial mentality and artificial humanism. The establishment has been wrong. It has been cruel on the innocent people, not because law is bad, not because the Constitution of America is bad, but because the mentality of these people is bad, bad, bad. Many of them want to demand that we not be Muslim, that we make a choice between citizenship and equality in America, make a choice between Islam and what America has to offer. I'm telling you, this is their mind. Now you can have Islam, but have it in name. We don't want to have it in deed. Don't have it in principle. Don't have it in reality. I don't mind you niggas wearing a bunch of fezzes and wraparound and robes and sandals, but don't you niggas get serious about that religion. Been done so far is a marvelous and miraculous thing. So why don't they just back it? Don't you know there's no way to have peace in America with Bilalians identifying with the church? Now I know you don't like it, but I'm not here to do and say what you like. I'm here to do and say what's good for you.
Accept them
is our God and our master, and I'm not going for it. Thought you said Christianity was beautiful when you understand it. Well, I'm trying to take out the bad understanding. And a Caucasian for a God is a bad, bad understanding in Christianity. Look how small we are in numbers. Crazy we were in our beliefs. You can't find a Klansman that was more fanatical than we were. But look how intelligently we have acted without the degree, without the cultural background. Look how intelligent we have acted. We have put down our black God and have told the world God has no skin color. And truth. Now, if they're not able to follow us and put down their racist God on that cross, God is going to wipe this country right off the map. Over the other people of the world is the very thing that is destroying their hope for a brighter future. The idea of God in the image of Caucasian people was a political plot, a political scheme, a political strategy. Europe was growing in power, and they had conceived a great plan to take over the world by using Aryanism, that old ancient Indian white supremacy doctrine, digging it up, bringing it back into the life of their people as a driving force for conquest. The old deceitful, hypocritical, lying Jew who rejected Jesus saw an opportunity to feed this kind of racism in the West and brought them a Christianity that was designed to support white supremacy. But the foolish West didn't know that those old crooked Jews were also bringing them a doctrine that would work as a slow time bomb. It would in time destroy the West. The wise old Jew knew that in time the West itself would be destroyed by the very thing that they had handed them as a mighty tool for conquest. And look at the society now. Look at all the Christians are frustrated. They're in a dilemma. Don't know where to go. Don't know whether to back up, go forward, go left, go right, go down or up. They don't know where to go. At a standstill. Ideologically. Logically at a standstill. Philosophically at a standstill. Morally at a standstill. Intellectually at a standstill. And politically at a standstill. You can almost sense and feel and see the static, the staleness. In the rule of this so-called Western society. Look, a president who, I'm telling you, the way that these people were clamoring for him sounded like Jesus was about to go to the throne. He'd been in office just 2 or 3 days, and already the people are saying, oh, it's nothing but another fizzle. Isn't that the attitude? That's the attitude. Oh, don't hope for nothing. It's just another fizzle. Excuse my language. I have more hope in President Carter, more faith in his leadership, more faith in America, more faith in America's future and America's leadership than the government of America has. Because I know their problem. I know how come they can't walk like they should. They got on bad shoes. All praise due to Allah. Changes over here. And I've heard your rumbling, disgust, mumbling, but I don't waste time with it. Oh, I can't follow that now. They letting devils in there. Now, this is somebody calling them devil that didn't even call them devil before. They were calling them white folks, you know. But as soon as the TV man opened the doors and said Caucasians can come in, a lot of people that didn't even call white folks devils. Oh, I can't back them anymore. I can't support them anymore. They're letting devils in. And they know white folks are devils, too. How can they do that? I heard one sister cry. I broke down and cried. Lord, they think it. We had hopes in that. You didn't have hopes in that. Unless it was the hope of keeping yourself hid. It was a good blanket for niggas to hide under. Let me repeat. That teaching about the white man being an artificial creation, grafted by Yaku, and all so-called white people being devils, was the biggest excuse that was ever given to niggas so they don't have to do anything but sit around and blame the white man for their shortcomings. Look, don't tell me, I know you. Walking around with your problem book, your 40 questions and answers. Your 14 questions. Yeah, brother. You know the black man is God. Say, Say, brother, look, I won't get paid until Friday. Can you give me a dollar? Hey, black sister, don't you know you the goddess? Say, sister, look, long as the moms don't know what's happening, don't nothing happen, sister.
Excite you to make you emotional enough to call a white man a devil.
to leave the church and walk in a new uniform. That's all he did.
Thought you said he was a master.
That's a master. That is a master. Anytime a man got enough psychological understanding to feed you with emotionalism and get you to leave the thing that you wouldn't leave under the feeding of that all the greatest lack of wisdom. Black educators, black religious leaders, they all tried to turn you around and let you see that you were walking against yourself. But none of them could do it. Elijah Muhammad did it with emotionalism. With a reverse psychology, he reversed the Christian racism of America and gave it to you in reverse, and it excited you just like it excited the Ku Klux Klan. Hold up. Their Christian racism excites them to be military, to be daring, to burn crosses. But soon as two or three black men stand up against 20 or 30, those sisters with those crosses and hoods, he heals. Why? Because that's a lie. That's an artificial. What you call it when you hype somebody up with something? An artificial injection, you know. So soon as you meet with cold reality, I don't care how high you are, you come down. And I've seen some awful high black guards telling you, man, they get so black, you look at their face and you can't see it. Face look like a shadow. I ain't joking. I'm giving you a poetic description of a recruit, man. I've seen brothers who got so wrapped up, so deep into thinking that they were God and black was their power. I don't know what the brother did, but he found some way to make a little brown he had in his black go away. He gets so black, they don't even look black no more. Look empty, like nothing is there. Like you can stick your hand through his face. He has translated himself clean out of reality. Look like you hit him, a bunch of dust will just fall out. Yeah. Black God. Didn't know that he was using the poison of Satan or the devil himself. Believing that blackness is your strength and your superiority was picking up, just the belief in that was the same as picking up the gun of your enemy and taking it and blowing your own brains out. That's exactly what it was. Don't you know the real builders, the planners and builders of racism, of white supremacy? Don't you know that they were happy, they were most gratified when they heard the talk of black people thinking that blackness is God? You heard white people saying they are racist and they are race haters and they shouldn't do that, but you never heard no real segregationists coming out saying anything about it. They liked it. You say that, well, they liked it because it served their purpose of separating the races. Well, you just ain't got enough sense to see a little bit further. They liked it also because it stopped you. America was forced to open up. But if all of you turn black and identify your human being, your human self with blackness, they knew that'd be the end. You ain't got no right to go in a door if you don't recognize the door. They were happy for that. Bunch of black people come into that. The job is done without us raising a finger. We don't have to worry about them now. We're sharing our knowledge with them, or sharing our wealth with them. We can deny them, and the whole world will support us. But God didn't intend that it happened that way. So Elijah Muhammad saw that the time was out for his kind of leadership. So before his death, he told you, stop going around here thinking that you're better than other people just because you're black. Then don't think that you can live around here without living in America. Say, go in, mix in, get in business with this. Run for government office. Isn't that what he told you? And in his last speech, he pointed to Caucasians on his stand, on his platform, and said, these are holy men. And told his people that if the Caucasian, or he said white man, I hate to use the term white, because it's a term for white supremacy. He said, you have to respect the Caucasian, the white man. If he can respect you, then you must respect him. If he can treat you decently, then you must treat him decently. Now, that's a far-reaching statement coming from that man. That means if a white man can accept me as his brother, I have to accept him as my brother. You may say, well, I can treat him decently without accepting him as my brother. There's no way to treat him decently if he accepts you as his brother and you don't accept him as your brother. There's no way to treat him decently. If the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say if they can respect you, you respect them. If they can treat you decently, you treat them decently. Saying that puts you on the spot. And if any white man would ask you to be his brother, and you say, no, you a devil, I don't want to be your brother, he could say, well, you disobeying your leader. Because your leader said, if I can be decent to you, you should be decent to me. If I can respect you, you should respect me. Is that being decent and respectful to call me a devil? He could tell you that. And what excuse would you have? You say, well, you just didn't understand all Elijah Muhammad. Well, you followed a liar. You followed a double-talking hypocrite. If the man didn't mean what he said, he was a liar. If he was doing double talk, he was talking with the tongue of the devil. Well, yes, we've made big changes, and we're going to keep making big changes as long as there's room for big changes to